We like to think of progress as this straight line. You work hard, you build something, and it just naturally grows. But when you look at the life of your ancestor, Joel Heureaux, pioneering the Canadian prairies in the 1920s, that straight line looks a lot more like a heart monitor during a panic attack.
Oh, absolutely.
So, welcome to this custom deep dive into your family's heritage. Today, we're tracking how Joe's endless adaptability really became the cornerstone of your family's story.
And, that adaptability had to kick in almost immediately. Like, Joe married Eva Carrière in 1914, and they started out at the Horseshoe Ranch.
Right.
But then World War I hits, and wheat prices just go completely through the roof.
So there's this massive economic incentive to jump into farming.
Exactly. So he takes a homestead just east of the Jackfish Post Office, and he rode that momentum hard. I mean, by the 1920s, he's renting 6 quarters of land.
Wait, 6 quarters. For context, a quarter section is 160 acres, so we're talking about almost 1,000 acres of land under his control.
Yeah, it's a huge operation. He's doing so well that in 1927, he drops $500 on a Model T Ford.
Which was big money back then. But prairie farming back then wasn't some steady investment. It's basically like playing a volatile stock market.
Totally. And the crash came fast. In 1928, an early freeze hit the crops, and whatever survived the frost was just leveled by hail.
Ouch.
Yeah, and that was really just the preamble to the brutal drought of the 1930s.
It's like pouring all your capital into a factory, only to have the roof cave in and your supply chain dry up on the exact same day. You can't just plant more wheat in a dust bowl.
No, you really can't.
When the land literally turns against you for 15 years, how do you even pivot without losing the farm?
Well, you look past the soil and you look under the ice. Joe actually turned to winter fishing on Jackfish Lake.
Wow. But setting nets under solid ice sounds incredibly labor-intensive.
Oh, it is. It's grueling. Luckily, his brother Paul brought back a pattern for this thing called a jigger from the Red Pheasant Reserve.
I was actually looking at the schematics for this. And a jigger isn't just a weight. It's an ingenious mechanical tool.
Yeah, it really is.
It's essentially a wooden plank with a metal lever mechanism. You slide it into one hole in the ice, pull a line, and the lever kicks against the underside of the ice. And that action makes the board literally crawl forward through the water to the next hole, dragging your fishing net line right along with it.
Exactly. It turned this massive multi-person job into something totally manageable. But, catching the fish was only half the battle. To actually make money, Joe had to outsmart the market.
Because those fishermen just, what, toss their catch onto the ice to let it freeze solid.
Right. But Joe, he loaded these 45-gallon drums onto his horse-drawn bobsleigh, filled them with water from the lake, and dropped his fresh catch right inside.
When I first read that, I thought putting water in a barrel during a Saskatchewan winter
Yeah.
seems like a great way to make a giant ice cube.
You'd think so.
But it's actually brilliant physics.
Yeah.
Water has this massive thermal capacity. So instead of exposing the fish to the minus 30-degree air, that 45 gallons of water acts as a thermal buffer.
Exactly. It takes a long time for that much water to lose its heat.
Right, which bought him hours of time before the cold could penetrate and freeze the catch.
And because he brought back fresh, unfrozen fish, he commanded premium prices. Buyers just flocked to him. On one fiercely competitive day, the price actually opened at 10 cents a pound and shot up by 36 cents by nightfall.
Oh, wow. That price jump is massive.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that influx of capital is the crucial link to his next chapter. Like making a premium on fresh fish gave him the financial runway to finally step off that agricultural roller coaster.
Precisely. By 1945, having weathered those hardest decades, Joe actually held an auction on the farm and bought a local store in Jackfish.
Traded the unpredictability of the soil for the merchant life.
Yeah, exactly. He hauled freight from the Miyota train every Friday morning, rain, snow, or shine.
And the sources mention him riding along in a heated caboose on those bitter winter mornings. And just to clarify for modern ears, this isn't a train car attached to a locomotive. It's a horse-drawn freight sled with a little wooden shack built on top, complete with a wood stove inside.
Yeah, after years freezing out on the open lake, sitting by a fire while the horses did the walking must have felt like absolute luxury.
Oh, I bet.
And he really thrived in that environment. Securing that stable living allowed him to focus on community building. He served as a local counselor for 7 years, sang low mass, and his door was always open to host local priests for meals.
It's a true masterclass in reinvention. From a farmer battling the elements, to a mechanical problem solver on the ice, to a beloved community pillar who retired in 1963 passing the store to his daughter Beulah and son-in-law Roland.
He didn't just endure the environment, you know? He adapted his strategy to leverage exactly what the landscape offered.
Which really makes you think about the nature of those pioneer survival instincts. Joe used the thermal mass of liquid water to fight the freezing air. It makes you wonder what other brilliant counterintuitive survival tricks did your pioneer ancestors invent to outsmart those brutal Canadian winters.